Hello, my name is Andy Julio, and I'm the host of the Tobacco Cessation Podcast. Today, we're talking about youth tobacco addiction and ways to help kids quit. First, I'm going to be joined by my colleague, Ruth Canovi, to discuss the problem of youth tobacco use and some of the ways the Lung Association is working with state tobacco control programs and others to address it. Then, I'll share a conversation I had with Dr. Mariah Ramander and Dr. Sarah Siddiqui, both practicing pediatricians and members of the American Academy of Pediatrics, or AAP. So first, I will talk with my colleague, Ruth. And to put some of this in context for our listeners, we know that approximately 16.5% or 16.5% of high school kids currently use tobacco products. This includes e-cigarettes, cigars, cigarettes, and other products. Additionally, about 4 out of every 100 middle school students, or about 4.5%, use tobacco products, which is really, really troubling. But again, we know that they want to quit, and we know that they're trying to quit. And we, as adults and as the tobacco control community, need to make sure that we have the resources to help them quit. And hopefully our conversation later with AAP will help highlight some of the ways to do that. Ruth, do you mind quickly introducing yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks, Anne, for this conversation. Like you said, my name is Ruth Canovi, and I'm an expert within the American Lung Association around tobacco cessation coverage.
Can you share a little bit about some of the recent work you did regarding youth tobacco cessation or quit smoking?
Yeah, absolutely. So as part of some work that we do, we offer these kind of learning cohorts for stakeholders, which can be tobacco control programs or other people who are doing important work in this space. And so we kind of gather around a topic, and we heard from a lot of people that they were wondering what to do with youth tobacco cessation. We've heard a lot around prevention, but really now we're kind of seeing lots of kids are addicted to these products. And so the question is what to do and how to help them. And so we kind of had unprecedented interest in from our stakeholders in participating in this group. And so we've actually had two, one in 2020. We were kind of learning a lot around what to do here. And then just in 2022, we had a new one where we really gathered people for 3 calls to talk about what we know, what we don't know, and how we can be more helpful and responsive to really what we're seeing out there in the world right now.
So what do we know and what don't we know?
Well, we know that kids are really addicted to tobacco. One thing that I often talk about with a number of people about this issue is a statistic that has really stuck with me. In 2021, the National Youth Tobacco Survey found that of the kids who are using tobacco, 60.2% of them actually made a quit attempt. It wasn't that they wanted to or they were thinking about, they tried to quit. So kids know they're hooked and they want help. And I know, we also know that there's a lot of people out there who want to help them. But this is new and evolving science. We're seeing people addicted in ways that we haven't in the past. And so we are trying to figure out the ways to best help them. And so we know that counseling works. And so I think you're going to have a really great conversation with the American Academy of Pediatrics about their clinical guidelines and what they have established. But kind of looking at other options as well that are available for personal work and interventions and ways to meet the needs of young kids in our communities.
What's one of the limitations that we see around youth cessation and why we don't have better evidence, why there isn't, you know, coverage of medications that we know work for adults? Why can't kids use those too?
We need more research. When we look at the grades for youth tobacco cessation, the United States Preventive Services Task Force looks at the evidence out there, and there's not a lot of evidence around what works, and there's a number of challenges with getting good research. One is, when you're dealing with kids, you've got a lot of challenges here. It's issues with parental consent, it's issues with kind of keeping people in a study. We're still working on it, but it can be really challenging to do. And so as we've seen this whole landscape of tobacco use with young people, I think the case for more research is there, So we're looking for the evidence base to really make sure that we can intervene in a way that makes the most sense for young people and address this. There is the question around off-label use of these products. There's a number of questions around kind of nicotine replacement therapy and how to address that for young people. There, again, we need more research around that, but there are more conversations around off-label use for young people. And so I think that's why the conversation that you're having with the pediatricians from the AAP will be really helpful in having conversations about how to address the need now.
Also, there are a bunch of resources available to help kids quit now, whether those be counseling resources or other resources for parents, providers, as well as school personnel. There's a great repository that a number of tobacco control partners have worked to put together, and we'll include that link in the show notes. So thank you so much for joining us today, Ruth, and I'm so excited to talk with AAP, and we'll share that conversation next.
Great. Thank you so much, Anne.
Dr. Ramandar and Dr. Siddiqui, can you please quickly introduce yourselves?
I'm Mariah Ramandar. I am adolescent medicine pediatrician and the medical director of our adolescent substance use and prevention program at Lurie Children's Hospital of Chicago and an e-cigarette expert for the American Academy of Pediatrics.
Hello, everyone. My name is Sarah Siddiqui. I'm a pediatrician at the NYU Langone Huntington Medical Group and clinical assistant professor at the Hassenfeld Children's Hospital. And I'm also the chapter champion for e-cig and vaping in youth in the New York State Chapter 2 American Academy of Pediatrics. Thank you for having us today.
Thank you so much for that. We're so excited to have you both here with us today. You know, Ruth and I talked a little bit about the clinical considerations, but kind of from your perspective, can you explain what they are and why they're useful?
So the clinical considerations were developed to give pediatricians a concise, actionable way to address adolescent tobacco and nicotine use within their clinical setting. So it provides the ACT framework, so ask, counsel, and treat framework for addressing nicotine use. And then gives people the tools to be able to treat by providing counseling. And it provides some pharmacotherapy options that you can discuss with patients and families to help adolescents with their nicotine use as well.
Yeah, I'm just going to add that the clinical considerations are kind of like a call to action for pediatricians. Screening for nicotine use and combustible tobacco use should be done at every visit with children. And it's really important that pediatricians know that there's a concise tool that they can use to cut back on some of the time constraints that we have during our office visits. So it's an important call to action and a concise way to interview our patients and screen for nicotine and tobacco use.
So that's really great. Why did the American Academy of Pediatrics create the clinical considerations, and kind of what was the process for doing that?
So some of the background that the American Academy of Pediatrics was thinking about when considering or developing these considerations was that the youth tobacco use is an urgent clinical concern. So we know that nicotine use and tobacco use among our youth has been on the rise. The vaping products that are being used by our youth are sometimes very easily obtainable, and unfortunately this is causing nicotine addiction in our youth. And sometimes we don't realize that they're addicted, and they don't even realize that they're addicted. So it's really important that pediatricians know that they need to speak to their patients regarding this and speak to parents as well. And the AAP wanted to really try to make sure that, you know, in addition to all the other things that pediatricians have to interview for, that they have a concise way to kind of ask them and something that has some evidence behind it. So the ACT, Ask, Counsel, and Treat model was developed.
That's great. How do both of you use the framework in your work and in your practice?
And so the clinical considerations provide some really great guidance for conducting the ACT framework within your clinical setting. So ACT stands for, again, ask, counsel, and treat. So the considerations provide some examples of how to ask, so some sample questions, some validated screening tools that are freely available, like the CRAFT and the S2BI. And the CRAFT 2.1N includes questions around nicotine and e-cigarette use. So that's, you know, right now one of the best screening tools. You know, and if for folks that don't feel like they can add another screening tool to their already busy clinic, just being able to ask the right question is important, because we know that asking youth, do you smoke, they're not going to answer a question like you were asking them, do you use e-cigarettes, do you use other tobacco products? And so starting off with kind of a general question and then providing some examples based on the products that youth are using is a nice way to get to the real question that you want to know. Are you using any kind of nicotine or tobacco products? And then the clinical considerations offer some feedback on how to counsel youth depending on their answers. And so how do you respond? How can you do some, you know, motivational interviewing, some brief advice, some high fives for folks that have never used to, you know, encourage continuing to make healthy decisions? And then for those that are using, you know, maybe have just used a couple times, how do you respond and help them be able to cut back or stop their use? And then for those who really do have signs of addiction, being able to get them the treatment that will be helpful for them long term, because this is really tough. And then the last part is really providing that treatment, or really providing some guidance around offering treatment, or even if you're not offering treatment, which is really not hard, but I know that some people, you know, it's outside of people's comfort zone, but it's really great to be able to give youth a heads up about what their options are if you're going to connect them with treatment elsewhere. And so talking through medication options, talking through different, you know, support systems like the Truth Initiative text support system, talking through, you know, behavioral counseling, hooking youth up with quit lines where they can get free counseling depending on, you know, what's offered in their state. And so just, you know, giving pediatricians a framework for really being able to, you know, concretely address this within the clinical setting.
And yeah, I mean, just to add to that, the way I use it in my clinical office-based practice is trying to really make sure that we address it at the visits after age 11 or 12. And then some of my high school visits, I try to have for a little bit of time, I ask the parent to step out of the room, because sometimes these questions, we do want to maintain some confidentiality. It is really important to have our patients really feel that they can open up to us. And that does take time. So sometimes it doesn't happen in that first or second time that you see them, that they, you know, but the more you ask about whether their friends use tobacco or whether their family members are using tobacco or nicotine products, that sometimes opens up the conversation that they may have tried it. And it is sometimes important to really develop on those conversations. So it's this framework really does help to guide us and to give us those tips on motivational interviewing. And it is something that you have to build upon, but also if you do find that they have tried it, it's really important to kind of say that, yes, this happens, and not that pediatricians are judgmental, but I think that sometimes the way you ask a question or the way you respond to something is so important, and important to make sure that they continue to open up to you. So providing that really safe and confidential space for them is very impactful during these conversations.
And I'll just add that, you know, the confidential conversation is so important in allowing that private space, and, you know, and doing that, you know, with each visit, so youth don't have to ask for that, because that's really hard to do, just knowing that they can expect that so they can be open with you when things change. But then, you know, we know that family involvement is so important. So as the youth allows, and it's great to bring them back in to provide support around, you know, youth and kind of certain, what are the components that you think are important to share with family? What does the patient allow? And, you know, they can be a great support system for helping youth really engage in treatment and, you know, get better in the long term. But we, you know, it's always best to respect the patient's, you know, wishes around their confidentiality.
Absolutely. Sometimes a conversation with the parent is also something that happens, teaching the parent to provide that support system if the child does turn out to be addicted. That's a resource that's very important to have the family behind that patient and student and child. So
currently, there's very limited coverage of tobacco cessation medications for people under the age of 18. How does this impact youth treatment for tobacco addiction, and what improvements can be made for covering these tobacco cessation medications for youth?
So essentially, all the FDA-approved youth cessation, nicotine replacement therapy, and cessation products are developed for 18 and over, but we do ask, the American Academy of Pediatrics does recommend that pediatricians learn how to prescribe and give medications under 18 for those patients that are addicted. And again, it is something that we can learn and provide for our patients. Unfortunately, some of it is not covered, and it does impact how our youth obtain these medications that are important for quitting. So it is really important that we try to advocate and make sure that some of these things start to become covered. I know we are working on trying to get nicotine replacement therapies, patches, and things like that to be covered for those patients that need it. And it does impact our ability to provide for these patients.
Yeah, we know that these medications, particularly the patch, the gum, lozenge, are safe and effective in adults in their efforts to quit tobacco and nicotine products. And we also know that these products contain, or the tobacco and nicotine products contain bunch of other chemicals, toxinogens, carcinogens that the medications do not. So in that, for those reasons, we do recommend that pediatricians consider the use of these medications in youth under 18, because, you know, that continuing to use tobacco is incredibly harmful. And really, for people under 18 to access them, they need prescriptions. And, you know, this can trip people up where, you know, folks with Medicaid, their families may not get explanation of benefits to, you know, let them know that they're accessing these medications if they wanted to do it confidentially. However, people who, you know, who need to use their private insurance, their families may find out that way. And so that can be a barrier for youth accessing medications to help them quit, because if they, you know, don't want to involve their family yet they're not ready to, that can get in the way, because that would break their confidentiality. So unfortunately, though, you know, youth can access these theoretically, in reality, there's lots of barriers to being able to access them, because they, you know, at this point, despite Tobacco 21 regulations, where youth under 21 shouldn't be able to access any of these products to begin with, they clearly are not having issues accessing the e-cigarettes, the cigarettes, the dip, all of that. But they are restricted from getting these medications because they're under 18. It's messed up.
Yes, very much so. So what should state tobacco control programs know about the clinical considerations, or what would you want them to know about the clinical considerations, and what role can they play in disseminating them?
It would be great for state tobacco control programs to be knowledgeable about these clinical considerations so that they can let, you know, more people know about them, also use them, you know, as a model for developing other programs within their state.
I think it's important for our state tobacco control programs to know that there are initiatives in place to include our patients that are under 18, and that there are resources available for pediatricians. So perhaps webinars and more access to the clinical considerations and the ways that the American Academy of Pediatrics have put together a resource for pediatricians through the state QUIT programs would be really ideal and essential. I think that there are resources available that they can provide and that helps disseminate the information. So everywhere that we can kind of make sure that this information is spread out would be, you know, advantageous and help our patients and our providers.
And these are free? And you do not have to be a member of the American Academy of Pediatrics to access them. So really, we want them out there in as many hands as can be helpful.
And on that note, we can include a link to the clinical considerations in the show notes for the podcast. So if you're listening to this, just go back to wherever you found it, and we'll have the link in there. And anything else that either Dr. Siddiqui or Dr. Ramander want us to include. So what are some of AAP's next steps in disseminating these clinical considerations, and kind of where do you want to take them next?
So the American Academy of Pediatrics is doing a couple of things to help to spread awareness of the clinical considerations. They're actually in the process of adopting an app that can be used by clinicians to navigate cessation conversations, which would be amazing if you can condense it to something that, you know, we can use, you know, and really access on our phones. That would help so much. And another tool that, or another point of access that the American Academy of Pediatrics is doing is to work with schools and school health based programs to make sure that school nurses can have access to the clinical considerations and maybe include some of the ask, counsel, and perhaps not able to treat, but at least counsel some of these kids that sometimes come through the school system. They get caught vaping during the school day, and sometimes implement these kind of awareness or interventions instead of perhaps going to suspension, trying to educate and teach children and adults about the clinical considerations.
Thank you. So what else would you want people to know about treating kids and the clinical considerations and all of it?
I know that being a pediatrician and all of the competing demands and important things you have to address within a visit can be overwhelming. And sometimes I think people can feel like powerless against addiction issues, against tobacco and nicotine issues, and also just have this feeling like everybody's going to do it. So like, you know, can minimize when you have youth that are using, but just knowing that we do have power as pediatricians and other clinicians to make some positive impacts on youth lives, because we know that tobacco kills, and this is the age group where it starts. And so fortunately, thank goodness, most youth are not using nicotine or tobacco products. But those that end up, you know, having issues with addiction start as teenagers. And so it's so important for us to start, you know, attacking this now. And, you know, really understanding the tools that are available and then providing them and getting in the hands of youth and their families so that they have all of the tools that they will need to quit nicotine, because it's so powerful and it's so hard and it takes a long time, often, unfortunately. So don't give up. You know, just try it within your practice and get comfortable with it. And the more you do it, the better you'll feel. And it's awesome to be able to help youth quit these terrible, dangerous things.
Absolutely. I mean, I am going to agree with some of the, as a pediatrician in my day-to-day practice, it sometimes is very difficult to tackle every single thing on the list that we have for our adolescent patients. But it is really important to incorporate these considerations into our practice and make sure that we use these tools. And it is, I think, sometimes as a pediatrician, you do get overwhelmed, but I think it is really important to remember that we are impactful in our patients' lives, and it is something that we can really use for the betterment of their health. And I think that it does require multiple conversations, so don't give up is a really important, I think, something that, you know, I always think about in my practice, is that it does take multiple conversations. And even if you do have a patient that is addicted, and just please know, and please let the parents know and yourself to know that it does take multiple quit attempts in order to quit, and to really provide that support and resources that we have. And again, don't give up. It's something that is really important in the future health of children.
Thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it, and I'm sure everybody listening will.
I hope you enjoyed the conversation I had with Dr. Ramander and Dr. Siddiqui. They are clearly visionaries and experts in their field and really want to help kids and all youth and all people quit tobacco, which is all everyone's goal here. There are a lot of challenges in this space. We've linked, again, in the show notes to both the resources in the repository that the Tobacco Control Partners have created, as well as specifically to the clinical considerations that Dr. Ramander and Dr. Siddiqui referred to. Again, this is kind of AAP's framework to use FDA-approved medications off-label for kids to help them quit tobacco. We know that kids are using tobacco, specifically e-cigarettes, at extremely high rates. They're severely addicted, more so than they had been to previous tobacco products. And again, we know they want to quit. As Ruth said, a lot of them are making quit attempts. And so we just want to make sure that they can be successful. Again, thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the Tobacco Cessation Podcast. And we look forward to having you again soon. Thank you.